Okay. I guess we'll begin then. And it's their loss. I locked that door, so they have to come in through that door now.
Okay.
So it's to not interrupt us.
Oh, okay, I like that idea.
Okay. So, A Creature Was Stirring, which actually is the title of an anthology of Christmas stories that I don't actually expect you to buy, but I have to, you know, put that out there. I see very few children here. I had prepared this slide specifically for the children. So, warning, Santa Claus is real. Telling children otherwise is a jerk move. And Santa will not give any presents to smug jerks. But
yes.
There are no children here, so we're good.
Okay.
And actually, that was what my mother told me, too. She's like, you can hold whatever belief you want, but Santa won't give you presents if you tell children there's not a Santa. I'm like, got it, Santa. Definitely a Santa Claus. 100%. And we're going to start right with Santa Claus. I'm not going to dangle that in front of you. You know, you're here for Santa. Let's get to Santa. And this is St. Nicholas of Myra, an actual man. He was born in the 3rd century AD in the city of Patara, which is now in Turkey, but then was part of the Eastern Roman Empire. His parents both died of the plague. It was that time. So he was taken in by his uncle, who was a bishop. And he quickly rose through the church ranks. He was tonsured as a reader. Then he became ordained as a priest. And finally, he became the Bishop of Myra, following in his uncle's footsteps. But why do we care specifically about this man? Certainly there have been many, many bishops of many, many places. So why is St. Nicholas the fourth most recognizable person in all of Christendom? After God, Jesus, and Mary. After that, I guess we just shrug our shoulders and say, Moses who? And what really helped him out was when Emperor Constantine convened the Council of Nicaea. And he said, everyone in Christendom has to come, and we're going to have this big meeting. And there was a very popular priest named Arius. And Arius had a controversial opinion that Jesus just popped into existence. There was nothing, then there was Jesus, rather than having been born of a sinless woman. And so Nicholas walked up to him, and being a very devout man, punched him square in the face.
Oh, wow.
Right. And they separated Arius and Nicholas. They sent Nicholas home to Myra. And they excommunicated Arius. And so back in Myra, they're like, wow, you knew that heretic was no good. Let's see. See?
Uh-huh.
Punching them. Yes. yes. So this was great for Nicholas because they're like, what foresight do you have? What wisdom? And so this did great things for Nicholas. Like, he was very popular. He was a folk hero. He was the Chuck Norris of that era, you know, because he punched a heretic straight in the face. And once he got back to Myra, I guess he felt very puffed up by this. And in Myra, there was a temple to the goddess Artemis. Well, that's paganism. We can't have that. So he burned it down with the priests inside. And one of the surviving priests went to Nicholas and said, well, what am I to do now? Where am I to live? And Nicholas said, you can go to hell where you will burn for eternity. So it's a little different than our jolly present giver. Just a smidge different. Let's see. Of course, Nicholas is a saint. And as a saint, you have to perform miracles to be canonized. And so what are St. Nicholas's miracles? There's a lot that hagiographers, the people who come up with the histories of saints, attribute to him. One says that as a child, he healed a woman's withered hand. That's pretty miraculous, but not a lot of details there. Another is that as a young man, he fought pirates. Now, that absolutely fits with our, you know, priest-punching Nicholas. However, it's not that miraculous. It's cool. I'll give you that. Not miraculous. Yet another is that he rescued a mariner by summoning a whale, which I think makes you a Pokemon master. I'm not sure if it makes you. It's cool. Again, and it's miraculous. Another is that he parted the sea to save slaves to get them away from their master. Again, good power. And I'm seeing a lot of sea-based ones. And the thought is that a lot of these myths are like, did you hear what Neptune did? Do you mean Neptune or St. Nicholas? I mean St. Nicholas. St. Nicholas did that. One is that he gave gifts to those in need, always anonymously, so how do we know he's the one who did it? Or that he looked after children in peril. which is great, but a lot of people look after children in peril, and they don't get to be saints.
And everybody was in peril back then.
Right, everyone. We will get to that, too. Actually, right, and one of my favorite myths that probably didn't happen is that a boatload of Constantine's wheat came in, and it was in 311 during a famine. And Nicholas said, "Why don't you sailors unload that wheat? I'll take some of it, then you put it back in the boat, and I promise you there will not be a grain missing." And the sailors are like, "Well, I guess we'll try it." And so he took 2 years' worth of wheat to feed the famine-starved Mira. And they loaded it back on, and Constantine had no idea any wheat was missing. I think that more is to say that he has poor accountants than that it is a miracle. But fine. The three that, according to the church, are actually attributed to him, one is that he cast demons out of a funereal cypress tree. Now, if you're a demon and you're going inside trees, I feel like Wormwood's not pleased with you. Like, you're not causing people to sin. You're just hanging out inside a tree. It's like Keebler elf stuff. Unacceptable. But it is one of the miracles attributed to him. Another, and this is a very popular one, is that there were three young ladies. I imagine them as Irish triplets if they came one after another after another. And they were all going to come of age. But their father was very poor. And so he could not afford a dowry for them. And so the choice was, you know, either you get married or you go right to that brothel and become a prostitute. And St. Nicholas couldn't have this. So the night before one of the young ladies came of age, I guess she had put her stocking up to dry by the fire, and St. Nicholas just dropped a gold ball in it and was on his way. And so she didn't have to become a prostitute. Good for her. Good for St. Nicholas. And then her next youngest sister is like, "Oh, well, you know, I guess I have nothing to lose. I guess I'll put my stocking up here, too." And the next morning, ball of gold, doesn't have to become a prostitute. At this point, the third Billy Goat Gruff pretty much had no worries. She's like, "You know what? I'm just going to do this." And yes, ball of gold, yes, she didn't have to become a prostitute. Good for her. And so that is one of his miracles. The myth does not explain where these balls of gold came from. But apparently, yeah, he had three balls of gold, and what else are you going to do with them? And the third myth, the one that I call the ham boy myth, is that three young boys were walking through a path. Either they were very rich or the innkeeper in the story is very hungry. And the innkeeper said, "Boys, why don't you come over here?" And then he brutally murdered them and cut them into pieces and put them in pickling brine so he could sell them as hams. And St. Nicholas walks by and he's like, "Do you have boys in those? Are there boys in those barrels?" "No." And he resurrects them. Now, I like to believe that he sewed them back together, but the mythical record does not back me up. I just think that would be a good addition to the story. It also doesn't say what happens to the innkeeper who brutally murdered three children just to do it, basically. But since Nicholas was a real person, we have historical evidence of him. We had his skeleton. And actually, I guess invaders were going to attack Mira, and a bunch of sailors said, "Well, not on our watch," and they took his bones. But not all of his bones. They took the important bones. They took his skull, his ribs. They have, like, the phalanges there. We don't need those. And they took it to bury, and they made a little tomb for him. And apparently, on his feast day, December 6th, every year, the bones exude a clear fluid that smells of rose water. And they sell vials of it. You can buy what amounts to saint soup. And I guess they can't quite figure out why this happens. It's just a miraculous thing that is attributed to him. It is thought that maybe since the tomb is below sea level and Barry is definitely a port town, maybe capillary action is sucking in seawater. But why would it only happen on December 6th? Not very satisfying. From the historical record, we know that this is what Santa Claus actually looked like. A darker skinned man. We obviously can't know that he had a beard, but he would look so naked without it, so we're going to give him a beard. We do know that he's about 5 foot nothing with a broken nose. And they don't posit why he might have a broken nose, but we all know it's from a fist fight, right?
Pirates.
Yeah, and you know, he probably, like, someone punched him in the nose, he just spat that blood out and he went at that heretic. That's probably what happened. No one can contradict me. So how do we get from this diminutive Turkish bishop to our Santa Claus? And it's through a process which is called syncretism, where there were already these great myths about this bearded gift giver who in December would fly through the sky and give good children nice things and bad children he would have beaten. We'll get to that more. And that man, of course, is known as Odin. Right. And so to convert the pagans who believed in these Norse gods are like, oh yeah, that's what St. Nicholas does.
We got one of them.
Yeah, we got a guy totally like that, and he'll punch you in the face if you say otherwise. I like this quote that I found about this man, Jonathan Meath, is the head of the Real Santas with Real Beards Association. I guess he's also a TV presenter, and he says, Santa's really the only cultural icon we have who's male, does not carry a gun, and is all about peace, joy, giving, and caring for other people. That's part of the magic for me, especially in a culture where we've become so commercialized and hooked into manufactured icons. Santa's a much more organic, integral, connected to the past, and therefore connected to the future. Which, looking at it, I sort of have to agree. You know, if Santa Claus is warm and fuzzy, you would trust him to watch your kids. You pay to have kids sit on his knee. It's adorable. Yeah, so here's Odin. Oh, Odin, if you were good and a boy, would leave you an axe or a knife in your shoe or under your bed. And I googled knife shoe and this is what I came up with. L. Frank Baum, he of the Oz series, he came up with his own theories for why Santa Claus does what he does. First of all, he says that Santa is actually like an earned honorific, that, you know, this little Nicholas grew up with various immortals and they loved him and he was so good and holy that they said, you are now called Santa. It's great. And he said, I guess one of his caretakers, Ak, the master woodsman of the world, said, well, you've been with us, the immortals, your entire life, so let us show you what the real world is like. And they showed him the misery of children, and he's like, how am I going to solve all this famine and pestilence? I know, I invented toys. So the reason we have toys is because Santa Claus saw misery. Why not? It does sort of fit with the Rankin-Bass, Santa Claus is coming to town. So I like it for that. Even though our Santa is clearly the superior one, you know, the one in red with the white trim, that's the best Santa. Other countries have bad, wrong Santas. In Holland, I mean, they mostly have ones who are still in bishop robes.
Right.
How backward! We'll get to why he dresses as he does. So in Holland, they have Saint Nicholas became Sinterklaas. I was in the Sinterklaas festival that we had. I didn't mean to be. They just sort of shanghaied me into it. So he travels through the sky by means of a flying sled like we have. And he also happens to have a captured slave, which we don't really like to think about. And, of course, there Santa lives in Spain during the off-season.
Is this
Holland? Holland says that Santa Claus lives in Spain. Now, if you have the choice between the North Pole and Spain, you're going to choose Spain. We can't fault him there. We can fault him for having slaves, and we'll get to those slaves.
But the Dutch did have slaves.
The Dutch did have slaves, yes. England had Father Christmas. And if you've ever watched a production of A Christmas Carol, you see, you know, the Ghost of Christmas Present. That is Father Christmas. He's got a big green coat. He's like a nature god. He's got that big turkey leg. And England was so, we pressed our Santa upon it and it devoured him. So now their Father Christmas is identical to our Santa Claus. No difference whatsoever. So much so that on the show Doctor Who, when the Doctor encounters Father Christmas, it's clearly our Santa Claus. There's just no question. France has Pierre Noël, who comes in on his Christmas donkey, not Dominic the donkey, because that's Italian. And in Slavic areas, they have Dead Moros, who travels with his Ice Queen. It seems kind of death metal to me. So why does he have this red suit? A lot of that comes from Clement Seymour and his poem, A Visit from St. Nick. That established a lot of what we now consider the Christmas canon of what Santa is. It said, you know, he's got the red suit with the white trim. He comes in a little sleigh. He's a small guy, which Santa Claus is about 5'0", broken nose, for those of you just coming in. Like, canonically, we have his bones. We know this. And we also got the tiny reindeer, and we'll get to those, too. So combining that with Thomas Nast, who was a political cartoonist in the 1850s, Thomas Nast is why we have the donkey and elephant of our politics, why we have Uncle Sam, and why we have the figure of Columbia, you know, holding the sword aloft. And he's the one who's like, I'm pretty sure that he lives in the North Pole. Prior to Thomas Nast, no one really attributed Santa Claus to living there. I think just because it's a realty market that's untapped. Are you going to go up to the North Pole to check? Probably not. Are you going to go to Madrid, Spain to check? If you can get a ticket. I imagine there's a lot of Dutch children who are very disappointed when they're like, wait, I went to Madrid and there was no Santa. Mom, what's up with that? A third man, and New York's own Washington Irving, did a lot to distance St. Nicholas from his roots and make him our fat, jolly guy. In his History of New York, he was making fun of Dutch sailors who he saw as fat. So, you know, fat, he's got a big coat, he's got a pipe, just like the sailors did. And we're like, yeah, that's what Santa's like, of course. And all, those three sort of made a triangle, and in the middle was our Santa Claus, and it stayed that way. There is an urban legend that Santa Claus was invented by the Coca-Cola Corporation. That is not true.
I thought it was Disney.
I've heard that too. But, you know, because he's got the right colors, he's got red and white, that popularizes the whole thing. Not true. He did exist in those colors prior, but mostly because of Thomas Nast. So what else? Santa, of course, has his naughty and nice list. Or Odin has Hugin and Munin, his ravens, thought and memory, who fly across the world and listen at chimneys to hear what children are doing. And if they're bad, they're going to get beaten by demons. Yes. I think so too, and coal's the next thing I came to, because I'm like, well, where did this coal thing come from? That's a real obscure, specific thing. In a lot of other cultures, you get beaten up. And the best I came up with is a lot of our Santa mythos was cemented during the Industrial Revolution, where there was a lot of coal, and of course, you know, we stole from the English too, and they stole from us. That's how cultural diffusion works. And of course, there was a lot of coal to be had. But a lot of sources keep coming back to, well, screw poor children, right? Am I right? And so Santa Claus basically came down as like, your parents are poor, thus they are sinful. You just get what I pull out of the fireplace. That goes under your bed. You stay warm tonight, kiddo. If you were a good person, you'd be rich, right?
Right. So coal would actually be a boon.
Right. Coal would kind of be okay. I mean, it was already there. It was in the fireplace.
Or you're cold.
Or, yeah. I think we sort of covered the chimney, really. We see that even in, like, Irish mythology, we have a lot of, like, elves and fairies. They'll leave you presents by there. And St. Nicholas has saved those three young ladies from prostitution. The Santaologists, and yes, that is an actual thing that exists, even went so far as to try to figure out why Santa says ho, ho, ho instead of any other thing. It is not because of the three young ladies saved from prostitution. Good. The best they came up with is, well, it's a deep, hearty belly laugh. It's not like a supervillain laugh or like a skinny guy laugh. It's like, ho, ho, ho. You can sort of just imagine the guy who makes that sound, what he looks like. And he probably looks like that. I'm okay with that. Jacob Grimm, he of Grimm Fairy Tales, says that this was Odin's cry during the Furious Host when he went out hunting. Odin would call out, ho, ho, ho. I don't know how likely that is. He is Grimm. He did make up the fairy tales, so However, in a lot of malls in America, Santa's no longer allowed to say ho 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 for fear of offending someone. So now he that just doesn't come up.
Wow.
You know, again, because of the prostitution thing. It could be. He's a gardener. He sows the hopes and dreams of children. If you are a Canadian kid and you write to Santa, the postal code is H0H0H, which I believe goes to a Manitoban island, but Santa somehow gets it. And a lot of Nordic, pretty much every Nordic country is like, oh, Santa lives here. He has a place. It's just a little bit up north. And in England, in Canada, it's the North Pole. But it, basically, if you're anywhere in Europe, that's where Santa lives, except for Holland, where he lives in Spain. Because why not? So let's see. We've covered the elves. This is a Thomas Nast picture of Santa Claus. Pretty clearly establishing. Thomas Nast was obviously very influential if so many images that he created out of whole cloth are now established parts of our culture. Good for him. There's Hugin and Munin. All right, now we're going to get to the helper / the anti-clauses. And I think I should explain anti-clauses. Because you want your Santa Claus to be nothing but benevolent. You know, you can't have Santa beating children up, as some of these anti-clauses will. So you need a nothing but benevolent guy, and then maybe like a horned guy who does evil things. This is completely unlike religion. Alright, so elves. Alright, so first we should discuss, why does Santa have reindeer other than there are sort of reindeer up north somewhere? And a lot of this comes from Odin again and his mount Sleipnir. Now, if you count these legs, he has 8. He's a spider horse. And Sleipnir translates to slipper. He is the best of horses. And where Sleipnir came from is, according to Norse myth, a builder went to the gods and said, you know what? You need to keep enemies out. You need fortifications. I will build you fortifications. All I want is payment, as I want the goddess Freyr. I want the sun and the moon. And the gods went, yeah, that sounds legit. Okay. But you have to do it in 3 seasons and no one can help you. And then Loki, who is their trickster god, is like, what if we give him a horse? They're like, well, he can have one horse, okay? One horse in him, and he has 3 seasons, and he has to build us a castle. But Loki got the best possible horse he could find, a super horse. And with the super horse, he quickly was building the fortifications. So the gods took Loki aside and said, we're going to kill you. This is not a threat. We're legit going to just kill you. Unless you fix it. And so Loki went... Loki. He went full Bugs Bunny. And he found this builder and his super horse, and he turned himself into a mare, a female horse. And the male horse was so enthralled with the kind of horse that Loki was that he chased Loki horse all night long. The builder was unable to finish his fortifications, and Thor went in there and beat his head in with Mjolnir, which wasn't mentioned in the original terms, and I think that's why you unionize. And 9 months later, Sleipnir came out. And Odin promptly said, that's my nephew, and it is my mount. Because Norse mythology is a little tricky.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
So wait, does that mean Loki carried the mare to term?
Oh yeah, to term.
Okay.
So I suppose Loki stayed a mare until the Sleipnir popped out. I don't know why he has 8 legs, but from the 8 legs, we get our 8 tiny reindeer. Because he can fly. Obviously, he can fly. He's a Nordic horse. That's what they all do. And the names of the horses... I'm sorry. The names of the 8 reindeer also come from a visit from St. Nicholas, where, you know, Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, Vixen, Comet, Cupid, Donner, Blitzen. Originally, it was Donder and Blixen because it was Dutch. And then... I assume that the ghost of St. Nicholas said, you change that right now to something German, and it became Donner and Blitzen. It just means thunder and lightning, but he felt the need to change his poem to reflect it. But yeah, that is why we have that he comes in through the chimney, lands on the roof, bag full of toys. In the 1994 version of The Miracle on 34th Street, they say that reindeer can only fly on Christmas Eve. So I'm pretty sure if we wait 50 years and I do this talk again, that'll be an established part of the canon. You know why? Because of magic on Christmas Eve, obviously. But do you recall the most famous reindeer of all? Rudolph. Also the only reindeer who was under copyright. And he was created in 1939 by Montgomery Ward. They used to give away coloring books to, you know, to children. It helped popularize the store. And they're like, we're losing a lot of money on this. What if we make our own coloring book? So they got one of their workers, Robert L. May, and they said, you come up with a new Christmas thing that we'll give away. And he said, at first, Rudolph was supposed to be a moose. And then they're like, you know what, moose aren't friendly enough. And that's true, because I met a moose. And I was hiking, and I thought they were just overgrown deer. And it was made clear to me that if it swipes its antler at you, you're going to die. It'll just tear you up. On the other hand, last night a deer ran into my car and broke my rearview mirror off, so I'm no fan of deer right now. So Robert L. May made up Rudolph. And this was not without controversy, because of the red nose. And red noses at that time were for drunks. Drunks had them, and we can't have children coloring in drunkards. And so Robert L. May had one of his friends, Denver Gillen, draw a cute little deer. And they're like, oh, that's, no one's going to get confused. That's too cute. I would like to point out, because I'm an English teacher and I write books, that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is written in Anapestic Tetrameter, the same metric form as A Visit from St. Nicholas. This is what I get off on.
Could you explain that to me?
Yeah, like, 'twas the night before Christmas, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Ah.
It's the same, it's got the same syllabic form, yeah, the same stresses. So I appreciate, he could have just drawn a picture of a cute deer, called it Rudolph, and kids would have bought it, but he made up a whole poem. What I find most miraculous in this story is Montgomery Ward is like, we're making a lot of money off this character. Robert L. May, do you want him back? You made him up. You're a good guy. Take it. And so I'm sure the Robert L. May estate is still raking in the bucks. Because if you use Rudolph or allude to him, they will sue you and you have to pay them. And there is some Christmas special where it's clearly supposed to be Rudolph's progeny. And every time they're about to say Rudolph, Blithen says, don't you say that name around me! So they get around having to pay out. So that pretty much is, those are our American things. That's the background. So let's get into, oh, yeah, she thinks I'm cute? Nope, she thinks you're drunk. All right. So then we go to Neckrupprecht. Gonna say German? That's Neckrupprecht right there. Depending on the myth, he's a foundling that Santa Claus found and raised, even though they seem to be about the same age. But I guess he doesn't age anymore. Still, it's true. So, you know, maybe he's a little younger.
What is he? He's
one of Santa's helpers. If you see, he has a little bundle of sticks right here, and he will leave this with the parents to beat their children with. He'll put it in the kids' shoes just so they know what's coming. We see that a lot. He approaches children and he says, can you pray? And if the child can do a prayer, they get apples or like a little bit of candy. If they can't, he has a bag of ashes and he beats them over the head with it. So you should definitely learn your prayers, right, kiddo? Let's see. He's got weird details. Like, he has a limp from a childhood injury. So he limps. I don't know why. Except he looks like that. And actually, he existed prior to Santa, prior to Christianization. He was sort of just like a house spirit who could be mischievous or he could be benevolent. But after Christianization, it's like, nope, he's pretty much evil. And he's under Santa's thrall. And Santa also raised him. I don't know, it's sort of like a comic book where they keep rebooting his origins. But the important part is, Santa's the good one, he's the bad one. You can tell, very white, very black. That racial component will come up again. Sometimes Yes. Sometimes Nek Rupert comes around along with men in blackface dressed as women. Again, weird details that they've attached to this myth. I don't know. But so we sort of touched upon a little bit of racism. Just some racial contention. Maybe. So we should go right to Zwart Piet, Black Peter. That's just unfortunate right there. He is the Dutch one.
Yeah, that's how my brother spells his name.
Oh,
yeah.
Good. Yeah, so as we see, he's dressed in Renaissance fair garb.
Mm-hmm.
He's a white guy in blackface, got bright red lips. Now, in a 1950s book that really popularized him, he was depicted as a blackamoor. So, you know, just a guy from Spain who is black and who serves Santa Claus. Now, sometimes these guys, there are several of them, and they follow Santa around. And if you are good, Santa Claus will give you some candy. If you are bad, they will beat you up. They don't always beat you up. Sometimes they just pretend to kick you, which is a little more insulting. Like, they'll put you in a sack and they'll just pretend. Yeah. But yes, he's got a curly black wig too. You can't really see it with his big frilly hat. But he does. And they arrive like weeks before Santa's feast. Santa, of course, arrives on a boat from Spain. We have to keep that in mind. On a white horse, who I think is Sleipnir, with fewer legs. And, you know, they will sometimes give you candy, too. It depends on if you're good, if your parents say you're good. Sometimes the Dutch say, no, he's a Spaniard. He's not actually black. He's an ethnic Spaniard. It's just that he's a chimney sweep, and that's just soot all over him. It can't be overlooked. I don't know where the bright red lips came from, or the big curly wig. Maybe he's a chimney sweep with his head. It's hard to tell. 90% of the Dutch public don't consider this to be a racist caricature. And the rest sort of think it's a black Sambo. Awkward. And actually, since the 2010s, two prominent anti-Zwart Piet things have sprung up. One is called Zwart Piet Net, which means no black Piet, and the other is Zwart Piet is racism, which means Zwart Piet is racism. And they feel that this is an unfortunate reminder of colonialism in the Netherlands. And, you know, maybe we should move past this era. But he's hanging on, much like people are very upset when it was suggested that we change the name of the team, the Redskins. Yeah, it's a similar thing. It's like, but we've always done it that way. How is it racist? I've got a black friend and he's okay with it. Yeah. So let's go to something a little brighter before we go straight to hell. To the Bafana. The Bafana is... Here, let me bring her in. Bafana, come on in. The Bafana is a grandmotherly type who's on a flying broom and is not explicitly a witch, but she's a witch.
You can tell because of the bonnet.
Right. It's very demure.
With a sack on the back.
Yep. And she appears on Epiphany Eve, which I believe is January 6th. We've got these figures appearing sporadically. If they all came at once, we wouldn't be able to handle it. What is good about her and how she differs from the other anti-clauses is she'll sweep up when she's done. She'll come into your house, give your kids a couple toys, and then just sweep, clean it up. Some people feel like that's symbolic that she's sweeping away the prior year, but it's nice if she cleans up. So her myth, her story, is that she was a little old woman, and she was approached by the biblical magi, who were lost on their way to find the Christ child. Even though they had a big star in the sky, men, am I right? They never asked for directions, but these magi did because they were wise men. So they approached her, and they're like, do you know where you could find the Christ child? She's like, I really don't, but I'm the best housekeeper. Why don't you stay here tonight, continue your journey tomorrow? They're like, that's a good idea. So they stayed there overnight. In the morning, they're like, why don't you come with us? You would be great. She's like, no, I have a lot of chores to do, and like, if I have to choose between seeing the Messiah and sweeping up, I'm going to have to go with sweeping up. It's I'm sorry. So once they were over the horizon, she's like, you know what? I can probably sweep up later after I've seen Christ. And so she went after them, but she couldn't find them. And so basically, she's still searching for the Christ child. And if she finds your child while she's looking for him, she'll give your child a present because she's a nice person. Now, then there's the dark reimagining of her myth. And that says that Bafana had a child whom she loved very much and who died. I'm going to go with horribly. I'm going to go with that adjective here. And she was so distraught that she found Jesus, and she's like, not like they do in prison. She literally found Christ. And she's like, you're my baby. And Jesus, even though he was a baby, is like, I'm not. But you gave me such cool gifts. I'm going to give you a gift. You are now the mother of every child, because every child has a little bit of Jesus in him. And so now she wanders the world and brings children presents, and she doesn't hit them with her broom. Which, given a lot of the guys that I'm researching here, that's rare. She totally could have. It's a good... They were that lost. They were very lost. Yeah. But that's nice. So now we're going to get to my little friend right here, the Krampus. So we've discussed Santa's basically like the best of men. He doesn't have a gun. He's a good guy. The Krampus is the opposite. You know, if you have a godly sort of guy, we need the devil. Now, the Krampus did exist in Alpine regions prior. He was basically like a nature spirit on steroids. He is Pan to the nth degree. So, and there, the myth was that Krampus, whose name in High German translates to just claw, the Krampus would steal your children if you let them wander away. Which is a good lesson, honestly. It's sort of like those German fairy tales where, you know, they boil down to, you will get eaten if you don't listen to your parents. So listen to your parents. If you're living in Alpine regions, you know, if you wander away, you will freeze to death and wolves will eat you. Or the Krampus. So just be like, kids, be scared of this so you don't have to be scared of what's really out there. And so when Christianization came in, they're like, obviously he works for Santa. Obviously. And so he has chains, sometimes little bells on them that he'll just shake at you. He gives you nothing if you're good. He ignores you if you're good. If you're bad, he'll put you in his little basket and he'll drag you to hell. If you're a woman, he'll beat you with sticks. I know, she's good. She got apples. She's sitting there watching her brother be dragged to hell. Look at her little eyes. She's devious. She and the Krampus are in it together. I don't trust her for a minute. But yeah, so Krampus existed already, and it was thought that he was bound by the church, this heathen figure.
So presumably the chains, he's let out.
Yeah, I think so. To abduct some children, because you should behave. And you know, he's pretty unambiguously evil looking. Look how he has one humanish foot and one cloven hoof. That's hard to walk on. No, zero cloven hooves. He does have sharp claws, but that's better. However, fascist regimes went into Germany and Austria, and around the 40s they stopped emphasizing Krampus. Does anyone remember anything that happened in Germany around the 40s? Yeah. How many Jews did he kill? He killed zero. But they're like, they actually in the 50s put out a pamphlet that said, Krampus is an evil man. Not Hitler. Hitler was okay. Krampus, though. But Krampus has had a recent resurgence. I have a story about Krampus. This man, Maurice Bruce, said basically that he is the horned god of the witches. I don't know about that. He didn't. He does have a lot of fur. We don't know. We're going to assume. But yeah, that. We'll go back. Pretty much to him. But yeah, so Krampus had a recent resurgence. Men dress up as Krampus, go get drunk and play pranks. Women, if you want to, can dress up as his, I guess, contemporary named Frau Petrucha. And she's the belly slitter. She'll cut you open and play with your guts. Again, it's not fun to be a kid in Germany, apparently. Like, maybe Santa will give you a little toy, or maybe this guy will drag you to hell, and his friend will cut your belly open. We don't know. It could happen. But yeah, that he's important. He's a good guy. He's just doing what Santa tells him to do. Because Santa could definitely stop this. You'd think. All right, so then we have the old cat. His myth is simple. If you get clothing, new clothing before Christmas, he doesn't eat you. If you don't, he's going to eat you. Yeah, which I'm pretty sure if cats were this much bigger than us, they would eat us. Yeah, house cats totally see us as food they can't put in their mouths. And the Yule Cat really came from the idea that we want the people who work for farmers to finish working with the wool so they can have clothes. But if they're being lazy, then they're going to get eaten by a giant cat. There's no two ways about it. They have tried to soften the myth, and they just say that if you don't get new clothes, the Yule Cat will come in and he'll eat your Christmas feast. Which a cat normal size will totally do, so I wouldn't be a Yule Cat. The last anti-clause we'll talk about is a man named Hans Trapp. And again, chained. He kind of looks evil. He's got a beard, which I've learned in TV, if you give someone a goatee, they're the evil version. So he's sort of like the evil version of Santa. He'll hit you with sticks. And again, he existed prior to being glommed onto by Santa. In France, he was seen as a Satanist, you know, who'd been excommunicated by the church, and he hid out in the forest as a black knight, and he would steal children, and he would try to take the virginities of young ladies. And then they were like, that guy hangs out with Santa. We just know it. So, because he's got the beard. He was a real guy. His name was Hans von Trotha. He was born in 1450. He was 6'6", which back in the day made him a giant. And he basically had like his own little fiefdom. He had his people, and he had a little quarrel with a local abbot. And the king is basically like, von Trotha, just stop. Just relax. And von Trotha's like, make me. I'm 6'6". You can't possibly. And so the abbot went all the way to the Pope, and Pope Innocent VIII. And so, unfortunately, before Innocent VIII could have deal with this, he died. And then his successor, Alexander VI, said, like, wrote to von Trotha's, like, we need to handle this. You need to come here and have a papal court, and I'll decide what to do with you. Von Trotha's like, I am 6'6", make me! And he wrote a letter, he's like, I'm a Christian, don't you question me, you are an evil man. He said that to the Pope, so the Pope excommunicated him. 600 years later, we're still dealing with this guy, because he wrote a rude letter to the Pope. Poor guy, I almost feel sad for him. But yeah, in this, I mean, he follows the same sort of thing, where like, he'll hit you with sticks, he'll give sticks to your parents to hit you with. He might give you a golden bundle of sticks, and that's to be put up on the wall so your parents know, like, you, that's like the elf on the shelf, like, you see that kiddo, we'll hit you, we've got sticks for it.
And these anti-clauses were myths before Santa?
A lot of them were, and then they just sort of Santa glommed onto that, like, that became the servant there. Because you want Santa to be unambiguously good. You can't have Santa punishing you, other than giving you bits of coal. So it's good if someone else takes the fall. These are our fall guys. All right. Let's see. So now we're going to get into me making fun of other traditions around the world. But they're weird, so I can. So this is the Caganer. This is in Catalonia, Spain. That is Lady Gaga, and what is Lady Gaga doing? Lady Gaga is pooping.
I was going to say that.
Lady Gaga, there was another image of her, and it was more unambiguous, but I didn't know the age group I would get here, so I figured Lady Gaga pooping was about as far as I could go with that. And in Catalonia, Spain, when you have your creche, you don't simply have you know, you got Joseph, you got Mary, got a little baby Jesus there, some camels. No, you have all of Bethlehem. You collect the whole set. And apparently, according to this, when the Christ child was found by the three wise men, somewhere in Bethlehem, someone was going number two. And it is like a fecophiliac Where's Waldo. Like, you're supposed to look at their big scene and find the one guy who's pooping. Traditionally, this was a guy, a little peasant with a red hat, but it has evolved since then. And you can get all sorts of Cogonairs.
Oh,
there you
God.
Got Michael Jackson, you got Elvis, Spider-Man, Michael Jackson again, SpongeBob, the Pope.
Well,
yeah. Catalonia, Spain's got some. I guess Spain really does have some Christmas magic. But yeah, you can get them in whatever form you want and just put them somewhere near the baby Jesus. Alright. Now here's a here's a tradition that's actually, we'll go back to the goat. In my household. I grew up trying to find a pickle in my parents' tree. And they told me, oh, it's an old German tradition. And I said, well, why? It's German. German do that. I don't know. And so I looked it up. And the German don't do this. They did not do this for a very long time. What it boiled down to is Woolworth wanted to import glass vegetables to use as Christmas ornaments. And this is the one that stuck. This is the one that stuck. So now, supposedly, if you find the pickle hidden somewhere on the tree, you get good luck. In my family, you get $20. But because this is obviously a bad myth of, we wanted to make money and we figured it would work, and they were right, they came up with a myth. They said that a man named Private John C. Lower was captured during the American Civil War. He might have been a real person. I did not investigate that deeply, but we do have a lot of details about him, that he was from the 103rd Infantry, and he was captured in April of 1864. And the story goes that on Christmas Eve, he begged his captors for a single pickle so he didn't die of starvation. And if I were starving to death, I don't think I would go for a pickle. I'm a quarter German, maybe a quarter of a pickle next to a good sandwich. But a pickle's not going to sustain me. But it saved his life. And so when he came back, he told all of his friends about it, and they all hid pickles on their tree in honor of Private John C. Lower. I don't know. Finding the pickle does sound a little euphemistic, doesn't it? Yeah. All right. So we're going to go. All right. Yule goats do exist prior to this, but I'm going to focus on the Gavel Yule goat, who is a specific and very tall Yule goat. This is in Gavel, Sweden. It is erected since 1966. It is erected in the town square. It is made mostly of hay over a wooden frame, and people try to burn it down. Since it started getting erected, it has only survived till Christmas 13 times. Every other time, vandals destroy it. Once, someone hit it with a car and just ran it over. I think there was a smaller Yule goat. It came from an advertising consultant who was like, this will probably be really good for our town. People will talk about Gavel. We will be where the Yule goat is. And I know about it. I didn't know Gavel, Sweden existed other than there's a Yule goat there. English bookmakers since 1988 have taken bets on will the goat survive. And obviously, the odds are not good. If you burn him down prior to December 13th, and he's not too badly burnt, like there's a wooden skeleton under that, then the goat committee gets the special goat straw, which they have in reserve, and they rebuild him so you can burn him down again. Once they put up webcams all around him, to make sure no one would get near him. And they hacked into it and put up a message that said, and I'm using the kinder word here, burn freaking goat. And then they burned it down. Because that's what you do. In November 27th of 2004, no, that was the one where it was, another year, they had guards posted all around it. But it was very cold. So the guards just ducked into a restaurant just to warm up a little bit, and the vandals burned it down. So the vandals are clearly very well organized. And as Christmas tradition, burning things down seems fun. All right, we did do pickle. Now we're going to go back to Catalonia, Spain for more pooping. Catalonia, Spain, what's going on with you? So, Tio de Nadal, the pooping log, the tradition is that you have him there. He's obviously just a log that you put a little face on. The nose has to be three-dimensional. I don't know why. He's sometimes on two little stick legs, sometimes four. And you just feed him a little bit every night before bed. And you put a little blanket on him so he doesn't get cold. Which is kind of endearing. Children do this, hopefully. Adults should not. If you're an adult with no children and you have a pooping log, I question you. I wonder. He has a little sock hat, you know, again, to keep him warm. And on Christmas, you put him tail end into the fireplace. And then you start singing a song, and then you beat the ever-living crap out of him. And then adults go in and under a blanket, it's like, look, he gave you some figs. Look, a bit of apple. And he does this until you've emptied him out. The last thing in him is usually like a fish head or a bit of garlic or some onion. But yeah, you sing a song like, give me something good to eat. Bam! And you just, children sing and beat him with sticks. So many, very few answers. How did this start? Why? And again, I use the softer word here, but it's clearly not supposed to be pooping log. It's supposed to be full curse word there. And sometimes when you're done beating him up, he urinates, which gives me more questions. I'm comfortable with little, like, fruits and things coming out of him, but the idea that when he's done, he voids his wooden bladder, I don't get it. That's way more infrastructure than a pooping log needs. Yeah, that's it. That's what I got for you. Merry Christmas.
Oh my gosh, it's so strange. How long has that pooping log been part of a tradition?
It's been a while. It's got to be